This afternoon's case is Washoe County Public Defender's Office versus Second Judicial District Court, case number 61173. Is counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Do you want to reserve any time?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Very well.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Pickering. May it please the court. I'm John Petty, and I'm here on behalf of the petitioners today. This is a matter that is before the court in asking this court to direct Chief Judge David Hardy of the Second Judicial District Court to rescind or otherwise vacate an administrative order that was issued in June of 2012. That administrative order purports to implement a pilot early case resolution project, but we believe that by virtue of the terms of the order itself, that such a program, if implemented, would violate several existing statutes here in Nevada, fails to comply with this court's ADKT 411, and in particular, doesn't comply with the Second Judicial District Court model plan that was submitted to this court for approval pursuant to ADKT 411, and as implemented, would fail to provide effective assistance of counsel under the Sixth Amendment in the plea bargaining process. On that note, I want to say that throughout my presentation this afternoon, I think throughout the entire presentation, the Sixth Amendment informs everything that we're going to talk about. And on that note, I also, I guess I'm happy to observe that we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of Gideon v. Wainwright, which was the Supreme Court's landmark decision guaranteeing effective assistance of counsel to those charged with criminal offenses but who cannot afford counsel. And as an offshoot of that, led to the creation of institutional public defenders, such as the petitioners in this action today, the Washoe County Public Defender and the Alternate Public Defender of Washoe County. In a nutshell, the administrative order that Judge Hardy issued basically allows the district attorney to select cases and remove those select cases from the ordinary criminal case flow. And then it authorizes a presiding judge of the Second Judicial District Court to appoint the Washoe Legal Services, an attorney from Washoe Legal Services. I'll refer to them as WLS for the rest of my time, as co-counsel with the Washoe County Public Defender. But then what it does is it says the Washoe County Public Defender shall not do anything with regards to that appointment or with regards to that case. It says that the Washoe County Public Defender shall stand aside, essentially, unless and until the case falls out of the early case resolution program. That is, if the WLS attorney cannot secure a plea and a to the charge and the individual does not wish to participate in the program, or if the district court judge were to make a determination that he or she is not going to accept the negotiations as offered, or I assume any other circumstance that might cause the case to fall out of that program, then it becomes the case of the Washoe County Public Defender.
Mr. Petty, is there a way that we could salvage this program? It's been in existence for a lot of years. It's been successful. I've heard judges say it's successful. It's certainly, from a financial standpoint of view, it could be successful, but can we salvage it in light of Gideon versus Wainwright and this 50th anniversary of a very important case to our Constitution? How can we salvage it?
First, let me say this. When we talk about early case resolution programs, there have been many that are out there. There have been several in Washoe County that have evolved. This is a different program than the one that existed. It shares many of the same characteristics, but this is not the program that existed before. A lot of what was submitted to this court in the answers by the real parties in interest spoke nostalgically about a program that once existed in Washoe County, and why can't we get there again? That is not this particular program. We, the petitioners, have no quarrel with the notion of ECR. We have no problem with the idea of early case resolution of criminal cases, but we think that the program should be set up in such a fashion that you get speedy resolution and efficient resolution of cases, but not at the expense or potential expense of fairness to the defendant or the possibility that a defendant might ultimately end up pleading guilty to a charge that is not sustainable or could not be sustained.
When you interpret the public defender stand-aside section, what does that mean to you? And specifically, how does that violate the Sixth Amendment right of representation?
What, well, I'll tell you, it violates statute, and, but I'll get to the Sixth Amendment as well. What the order says is that the presiding judge will appoint the WLS attorney as co-counsel with the public defender, and then it directs the public defender to do nothing until such time as apparently the WLS attorney cannot resolve the case by way of plea. And then when that falls apart, then the public defender is directed, the WLS attorney is allowed to withdraw or be relieved, and the Washington County Public Defender is ordered to provide representation. We think that that violates statute. In particular, we think that violates NRS 260.0503A, which says that upon appointment, upon the appointment of a public defender to represent an individual, that the public defender will represent that individual at every stage of the proceedings. It doesn't say, the statute doesn't say, at every stage of the proceedings except as otherwise delineated or accepted by court order. It says at every stage of proceedings. So what the administrative order does is it tells us we can't comply with a statutory directive that tells us we shall comply. So we don't think the order is compatible with the with that statute.
I'm wondering if we have to also be concerned, I know I interrupted you before you're getting to the Sixth Amendment, I'm wondering if we also need to be concerned with your ethical obligation based upon that appointment.
Exactly. In order to provide legal representation to a client, you have to establish a relationship with that individual. You have to understand not only that individual, but you have to understand the charges that are pending against he or she. You have to have a sense of the strengths and weaknesses of the particular case so that you can evaluate any offers that are coming to you from the district attorney's office and then advise the individual accordingly. Those are obligations under the Sixth Amendment. Those are also ethical obligations. While I was waiting to come here today, I was downstairs in your library, and in 1980, I published a law review article with a law professor called A Plea for Openness and Plea Bargaining, where we argued for complete discovery before someone could enter into plea negotiations. We haven't achieved that yet, but that is the goal to be reached. In order to maintain your ethical obligations, you have to understand the case. You cannot ethically go to an individual, simply say, "Hi, my name is John Petty. I'm with the Public Defender's Office. The district attorney has authorized me or has told me that he will settle this case for X. You plead guilty to this felony. Everything else falls away. You want to take it." I don't think that that's effective representation.
So fundamentally, you're against any type of ECR program.
I am not against
altogether, not just this particular.
I am not against any ECR program,
okay.
Justice Perry-Gerry. I believe that cases can be resolved in a timely fashion. I just don't think that 48 hours or 72 hours gives a sufficient amount of time in order to resolve those kinds of cases.
Could you create a model that has a standard sufficient amount of time, or is it a case-by-case basis entirely?
I think it can be a combination of both. It could be case-by-case, but we have in Washoe County right now, for example, in the Reno Justice Court, and it's being utilized in the Sparks Justice Court, as I understand, a mandatory status conference or settlement conference or whatever you want to call it, which takes place before the preliminary hearing, about 5 to 7 days before the preliminary hearing date, where prosecutors, defense counsel can attempt to resolve a case. By that time, defense counsel has received information by way of discovery, has met with the client, has established a relationship, has presumably spoken with the district attorney and received an offer, and cases can be resolved. Not every case is, just as not every case would be resolved under this proposed ECR program, but they can be. That is kind of the structure of what we're talking about. We're not against ECR per se. We just think that a rush to judgment, although it secures a conviction, and I know there's arguments in the answering briefs by the real parties in interest that gets people out of jail and back to their families, which are all good things. They are all good things. But at what cost? At the cost of becoming a felon.
But Mr. Pay, I guess my concern, and I understand your arguments, so, but the DA may be offering much better deals if you participate in this program, that if it gets kind of dragged out to go through the due process standard, you know, points you're making, the deals are not there, and in the long run, the defendant suffers from this delay. So is that part of the equation, though, the fact that the DA may be offering really, really good deals to just get these cases disposed of, get these people out of jail, save Washoe County money, and also get these defendants back to work and all like that?
I think you have a couple of questions there, so I'm going to see if I can tease up, separate them a little bit. I don't think we should assume that every case is going to get better from this prosecution standpoint over time. It could very well be the case that the case is going to get worse over time. So you can't assume that if we get that plea in, the person has somehow benefited. It may not be the case. It may be the case, for example, in a drug case where time has shown that what they thought was a controlled substance tests negative. It's not a controlled substance, and the case goes away. I think I have 5 minutes left.
I've got a quick question for you. Okay. If we remove WLS from this thing and leave it to Bassa's office, Lunt's office, and Bob Dell's conflict attorney's office, where one of those attorneys are appointed under the statute, and we don't have a second co-counsel, could this program work?
To answer that question is this. ECR programs can work if they're properly identified. Under our statutes, under 7115, under 171-1883, a court is required to appoint the public defender unless the public defender is unable to represent the person, and generally that's conflict, or if the person has been disqualified. And by disqualification, that's what would be like the Young situation, where there is such a breakdown in the communication between client and counsel that the court relieves the individual and has them moved. Or appoints other counsel. I'm not sure that you could say, well, let's set up an ECR program that, again, sets the public defender off on the side and goes directly to, say, the Bob Bell group. Statutes require an order, a process, and that process is it comes to the public defender. It was the second judicial district court under the model plan submitted by the court to this court under ADKT 411. The public defender is the initial appointment. If the public defender can't represent, it goes to APD. If the APD can't represent, it then goes to the Bob Bell group or the tertiary group. I'd like to reserve my last 3 minutes, if I might.
Well, but further to Justice Cherry's comment, had Judge Hardy entered an administrative order that established an ECR program that appointed the public defender's office, or sequentially the alternate public defender or separate counsel, depending on disqualifications, then you would have no objection to that administrative order.
The Washoe County Public Defender has no objection to participating in an ECR program that provides constitutional protection for the defendant under the Sixth Amendment, satisfies the public defender's goal to provide ethical representation. We don't want to be in the place where we're being forced to simply drive cases towards conviction and failing to comply with this court's ADKT 411 rules, the Sixth Amendment right to effective assistance of counsel, and our ethical obligations as lawyers in the state of Nevada.
Mr. Petty, as you know, the response in this proceeding isn't just a nostalgic memory. It was a program that worked, that involved both the DA and the public defender. And I do not understand why we are where we are today.
Well, Justice Hornstein, when I say nostalgic, I meant the order that is before this court is Judge Hardy's administrative order with the framework that's established there. The answers that were submitted by the real parties in interest didn't really address that. What they spoke to was a program that existed many years before. That they spoke of nostalgically. They didn't defend Judge Hardy's.
This public defender, your boss, and the other party who's here on this writ would support that order had it required an ECR pilot program consistent with the prior one that involved both the DA and the public defender?
No.
Would there be constitutional or statutory impediments to that program?
Justice Hardesty, the program that was...
Can you answer that question, please?
I intend to, Justice. The program that existed before has some difficulties that after this court issued ADKT 411, we felt the program was not compatible with the dictates of ADKT 411. And as a consequence, as set forth in my papers, that program was discontinued with the agreement of the district attorney and the public defender. We have been striving towards creating an ECR program that is compatible with ADKT 411, the Sixth Amendment, and our ethical obligations. Judge Hardy's administrative order does not achieve that. That is our position. Does it mean that it cannot be achieved? No. Should we work together to achieve an ECR program? Yes. Is there one in Washoe County that seems to be working? Yes, and that's the Mandatory Settlement Conference or status conference that is in existence at the Justice Court level. We are not opposed to efficient resolution of cases, but we don't want it to be at the cost of fairness or potential constitutional violation of our clients. Does that answer the court's question?
No, not really.
I'm out of time, but I'd be happy to take another stab. All right. Thank you, Justice. Thank you.
Mr. Petty, I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal and add two to Mr. McCarthy's time.
Good afternoon, Madam Chief Justice, members of the court. I'm Terry McCarthy, here today on behalf of Respondent Gammick. I've been waiting for a lot of years to say that, by the way. And also on behalf of the district court. With me today is Paul O'Connell from Washoe Legal Services. He's a named party in this action, and he also will have a few comments today. There are a couple corrections I'd like to make. First off, this order does not prohibit the public defender from doing anything. It says she'll have no further responsibilities, but it does not say that they cannot act. So it doesn't prohibit anything. It says imposes no responsibilities, but doesn't do anything else.
Then do I misunderstand the order? It appoints a public defender, correct?
Yes. Well, the public defender is routinely appointed, yes.
Okay. So you're saying that it doesn't prohibit them from doing anything?
You know, the real parties in interest would love it. If the public defender would show up at the jail on the first day and participate in this, they would be more than welcome.
Well, of course, they want these things called discovery and information and things that Absolutely. Might help them to consider the offer.
And you know, that's what this case is going to turn on. Are there cases that can be settled properly, quickly? There are some. There are also some that cannot. What this is designed to do is to weed them out, to find out which ones can be. And it will not be 100% accurate. I know it's a former public defender on the bench here. And, you know, we've been to the jail on the first day, and we've met the people the entire investigation consists of saying, the cops say they found dope in your pocket. What do you say? And the guy says, yeah, that's about right. You know, and we've seen those. And this program is designed to take experienced prosecutors, experienced defense lawyers, and to find those ones, to find them before it's too late. Not the one-week program we have now, a program that takes much longer than a week sometimes, but to find them now, before they get a job, before they lose their job, before the car is repossessed and the children are back in the custody of the child welfare outfits. That can be done. It's not every case, but there's enough of them, and we can do it.
But could we do that with court services, where a court service officer goes over and interviews that first day and says, I'm gonna have the judge release you on your own recognizance so that the defense attorney has a chance to really look at the case. Just look at it. I'm not saying you have to study it and have an investigator appointed, but certainly read the discovery and decide which way to go on it. And one of the things I worry about is the situation with co-counsel. I've been co-counsel in cases. And if the public defender is saying one thing and WLS is saying, Mr. O'Connell and his legal service person is saying something else, what's the defendant to do? You know, one's saying take a deal, the other one's saying don't take a deal. I mean, it puts a lot of pressure on a defendant who's usually not skilled in law.
The problem is not the conflicting advice. The problem has been, it should be obvious now, that the public defender has simply refused to participate in this. They have taken the position that there are no cases that can be properly settled quickly like that.
That may be so, but answer that question. That may be so. But what do you do if everybody's playing and you get into that situation? Where one PD is saying A and Mr. O'Connell's group is saying B.
Well, I suppose, I don't know. They'll have to be construed. This order will have to be construed. I would hope that the grown-ups in the affair could work it out. And if not, we'd have to get courts involved. I don't anticipate that because I think it's fairly clear that our public defender is not going to do it. They have refused to participate, which is what led to this order. If the public defender had said, yes, we will help find these things that can be settled quickly and easily, we wouldn't have the instant order. We have this order because the public defender refused to participate, refused to acknowledge that there are cases that can be properly settled quickly.
Is the order consistent with the mandate of ADKT 411?
It is. By the way, the one that's the version that's attached to the petition has is not the correct version. Also, the order, the master plan, there was a separate ADKT 411 approved by this court after that. And in Section 4.9, it explicitly recognizes the possibility of these early case resolution programs. So it is different than the master plan, but my position is that master plan, one, is supplanted, and two, it's not... It doesn't have the force of some immutable law. It's a plan. That's all. Nothing more than that.
Could you address the constitutional issue and the Sixth Amendment issue for us briefly and how you can apply that to this plan as a whole as opposed to a case-by-case basis?
Yes. There is no doubt but that every criminal accused is entitled to the effective assistance of counsel. What is effective, what is appropriate, and what is required is determined case by case. And there are times when the proper investigation is a 10-minute conversation. And there are times when it is putting your entire staff of investigators on the case for 6 months. This is designed to find those that can be properly settled in a matter of a few hours. And it won't be all of them, but it will be some of them.
Now, we're talking about cases that are in district court. I think Ms. Petty talked about the justice court program. So by the time the case gets to district court, somebody has at least looked at it, I'm assuming, except if there's an indictment. But I'm talking about the criminal complaint in justice court. So they've gone through that early conference down there, and now it's going to district court. Can we work something out so this can work?
Well, I think we have by this order. This order will bring into effect Mr. Elcano and his group very early, and before anyone has scheduled a preliminary hearing. This is in the first 48 hours after an arrest. And if it is successful, in most cases it will bypass.
So he's doing this stuff before the Justice Court program.
Absolutely. That's the problem with the mention of the current program.
How does he get appointed by JP?
He doesn't. It's by order of this. That's the administrative order that is before this court.
But the case is an industry court. The court doesn't have jurisdiction over the case, though, do they? Where's the jurisdiction of a district court when a criminal complaint's filed?
Well, that's good.
I've never heard of that.
I suppose he's appointing them.
I mean, the JP, under statute, is supposed to appoint the public defender or Ms. Luntz Group or somebody from Bob Bell's office.
Well, I suppose that if we extend that question, that the alternate public defender can't exist either unless someone is appointing them. But that doesn't seem to be the case. So I suggest that the district court can make this appointment, grant this authority, just as there's a statute now that allows a public defender, even before being appointed, to go into the jail and meet with people. And the statute seemed to allow for appointment of someone else. So, 260. Actually has a couple statutes that allow for appointment in addition to the public defender.
I used to do that as a district court judge, so let me tell you how I used it. In a murder case where the district attorney in Clark County would have two deputies, and the public defender did not have a second deputy, and they would say, can I bring Joe Smough in? I'd say yes. And that's how I use that statute. I'm not sure you're able to use it the way you were using it with WLS.
Well, there's nothing in that statute that says we can't.
I know.
And Judge Hardesty seems to have said it's a fine idea. So I think we ought to give it a shot. By the way, this doesn't last forever. This is a pilot program. And what everyone really hopes is that after the pilot program proves itself, that the public defender will deploy his resources accordingly and will have an early case resolution program involves everyone who's on the public payroll.
So then you'll have Mr. O'Connell's group will no longer represent the folks in the ECR?
There's a time limit on this order, yes. It's a pilot program.
But how do you appoint the public defender's office and say, go stand in the corner until we're ready for you?
It doesn't say, the order doesn't say that. It says no additional responsibilities, but it doesn't say that they can't act. And I've said it before, if the public defender wants to show up, I think they'd be more than welcome. Yeah, but
because the statute requires the public defender's office or the alternate public defender's office to be appointed.
Well, I don't think it does. When we have the statute that says the public defender shall represent, the word shall modifies the word represent, not the word public defender. So I don't think it says that at all. And 260.060 expressly authorizes the appointment of a
district. 7.115, a magistrate, master, district court shall not appoint an attorney other than a public defender to represent.
There are several statutes allowing for cause. If there is cause, we have an order that essentially finds cause. That cause, as I've shown you today, is the current public defender's refusal to participate.
For constitutional reasons.
If it were true that there are no cases that can be properly resolved in the first 48 hours, then that would be a legitimate argument. My position is they're out there, and they can be found. They can be properly settled with full investigation, everything that is needed, because in a lot of cases, what's needed is very little. You simply ask your client, what do you want? What do they got on you? And what do you want? And if the client says, they got me dead to rights like they've done it every time, the officer had probable cause, and he searched me and he found the bag of dope, and now what I want more than anything else is to get in the diversion court and get help for my addiction, then that can properly happen, consistent with constitutional principles. What we're trying to do is make that happen now.
So we rely on the accused to assert what he knows to about probable cause and the basis for the arrest, et cetera, et cetera.
We rely on the scope of the initial limited scope of the investigation. Sometimes that's all that is needed. Even Strickland says the course of the investigation will mostly be determined by what your client tells you. There is nothing that says Washoe Legal Services can't interview somebody. They're not just a mouthpiece. They can go and talk to them. What happened is the question.
I think one of the concerns when this was discussed during the 411 hearings is those cases where the client will say, I didn't do this. I had nothing to do this with this, but I want out of jail. You just take whatever they offer me, and this kind of promotes that.
Well, every public defender has had that, and you advise clients. The advice will be different depending on what the case is, but you know, we do have the Alford case. It says the protestations of innocence doesn't prevent a proper guilty plea. We don't want that. You know, if we got the wrong guy, or if it's actually innocent.
Actually, Alford says that you believe the state can prove the case against you.
Yes.
What it says?
Okay. If it's a knowing and voluntary plea, the protestations of innocence don't prevent the entry of the guilty plea.
So you could still enter the plea like Justice Perrier suggested. I didn't have anything to do with it, but, oh boy, I'll go with this Alford thing, and I can go home.
There are times that happens. I admit that. Now, what we rely on to avoid the improper convictions is not a prophylactic rule like is being proposed by the public defender. Instead, we rely on the professional skill of the attorneys involved to recognize and to counsel the What if the program was modified so that the type of person that was being interviewed by Mr. O'Connell's office would be eligible for a diversion program where they would go to drug court but no plea at that time? In other words, no plea of guilty at that time, and let them see if they can do drug court, get them out, get them back to work, get them out of jail. Could that work? Could that be a good pilot program where it doesn't violate anybody's territories?
Well, as I understand it, as it exists now, it's going to result in no conviction in a lot of these cases. When someone successfully completes the diversion program, there is no conviction. And I got to tell you, that part of what I do is respond to claims of ineffective assistance. If there's no conviction, that's the claim I want to respond to, because that I don't see how somebody can be prejudiced by not being convicted.
Well, could your office, like, go to Judge Hardy and try to modify it so that it would be only drug court cases where a person would be diverted out of the system without a plea of guilty, and see if they can prevail in the drug court situation, and then the case is dismissed and it's over?
I think to water it down to that point is going to remove a great deal of the value of the program. And in addition, I take guidance from Strickland that tells us don't make too many rules. Don't make too many hard and fast rules for the performance of counsel.
But you're not looking at robbery cases or sexual assault cases or homicide cases or any type of violent cases. I mean, we're talking about cases where property crimes and stuff like that, where people would probably be eligible for some type of diversion program.
And I suspect that with the guidelines we have now, that will be most of the cases. That there are going to be those that result in quick in probation or diversion, no conviction at all. I'm saying let's have enough flexibility to recognize there are other simple cases besides those that that only result in diversion.
Mr. McCarthy, you've offered a number of reasons why the ECR program is a worthwhile program, but I'm concerned about its impairment of the judgment, rightly or wrongly, of the public defender appointed by statute, designated by statute to represent the defendant, to make an independent assessment as to whether that is a program that lawyer feels their clients should be a part of. And you might disagree, I might disagree, reasonable people might disagree with the assessment that the public defender is making, but it's his to make, is it not? This program and any program that compels the public defender to participate voluntarily or involuntarily seems to contradict their role under the statute. Could you respond to that?
I can. There are two ways in which we could have got here today. The other one is a lot more heavy-handed. The district attorney could, on its own authority, without consulting anyone, without the authority of the chief judge, start issuing plea bargain offers that expire in 24 hours. We would still end up here today having the same argument, but we'd first have destroyed some careers. We really don't want to do it that way. And Mr. O'Connell did want to have some comments here, and I'm out of time, but I was promised a couple minutes, so if I may give those to Mr. O'Connell.
You've already exhausted them, but...
Oh, no.
Go give Mr. O'Connell a few minutes.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Center of the discussions, I think there are several misconceptions about what's going on. You don't want to limit this to drug court cases because four out of the six cases we handled initially were dealt with misdemeanors. I mean, you can get somebody out in a misdemeanor promptly and not risk them to a felony prosecution. That's a very critical thing, number one. Number two, you are dealing with people that are time sensitive. They're in the can. If they don't get out, they lose their job, they lose their families. And you're dealing with a situation with drugs where the incentive to go into rehab is highest in the first week while they still have a job and can pay for drug court, while they still have a family, and while they still have remorse and aren't operating under the illusion they can fix it themselves. constitutionally, it's clear under, here's the case, Missouri v. Fry, that when a plea bargain is tendered, the defendant is entitled to a prompt communication of that plea bargain. It's within the prosecutor's discretion to do it. When Mr. Gamek issues a plea bargain, it has to be taken promptly to the defendant and explained.
Do you have discovery when you plead these people to
misdemeanors? Yes, I have a file here.
You have a discovery on every one of those cases?
Yep.
And you never have a doubt, you never have a doubt about their guilt. In other words, you don't think maybe you need just a little bit of investigation.
That's a second distinction. Wait one second here. We have all the discovery the DA has, police reports, court services reports. You're welcome to have a file. Secondly, we do not recommend that plea bargains are taken. And under ADKT, nobody can recommend a plea bargain is taken until discovery is complete. So I would submit to you that no public defender can recommend a plea bargain under your ADKT 411 until he's about 3 days before trial. This is too early to tell a defendant he cannot, that he has to take the plea. But it is the defendant's choice. Rules of professional responsibility say that once a plea bargain is offered, the defendant has the right to accept or reject it. You can't take that away from him just because the public defender doesn't like it. Your ADKT says the defendant is entitled to make the decision whether or not to take a plea bargain. So long as there is full disclosure and explanation, it is his or her choice, not the public defender's, not the Supreme Court's. The defendant makes these decisions because they're life decisions for them. We look at them like legal decisions.
No, no. Those decisions are supposed to be based on learned counsel explaining to them the consequences of taking such a plea.
And that's correct. And when you have the, at this juncture in the case, you have the police reports, you can explain everything that's there. And if somebody's charged with some felony, they can get out for a misdemeanor, or if they want to go into diversion and get a dismissal, that's their choice. It's not your choice. It's not the lawyer's job to say, you've got to wait in jail for 2 weeks, lose your job, lose your family, put your kids in social services, while we decide whether or not this is a good deal.
Well, if it's such a good deal and it's such a good resolution, then why can't a court service officer release that person on their own recognizance so that you get a chance to look at the case?
That's their issue. I have no control over that. But it doesn't put them in drug court right away. And these cases will get them in drug court immediately and get them supervised.
But why do they have to plead before they go to drug court? Why can't they just go to drug court and see if they can complete drug court without a plea of guilty?
It depends on the case. I'm sure some will be diversions. Okay. Some will be pled down to misdemeanors. Some will be put into a plea agreement. And that's between our counsel, the district attorney, and how the district attorney wants to offer the plea. That's his call. That's not our call. It's not the public defender's call. DA gets to decide what the plea bargain is. They get to make the offer. The simple fact is that there's nobody down there to take it to the defendant within 48 hours so the defendant can decide, keep his job, keep his domestic relationship together, and start plugging. That's the issue, and it's sinful. The MSC program in Justice Court wastes 14 days. They have no more information then than we have in the first two. 14,000 jail days a year are being wasted. That money can go to handling cases that need it. Fry says it specifically. Plea bargains are used if they are used efficiently, so the resources that are available, which are limited, the prosecution and the defense, can be used in the cases that need it instead of spending all your time going around a wheel on cases that you got a misdemeanor on already or the
Mr. O'Connor, I don't think that any of this bench, if I may speak collectively, is debating that point.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first thing.
I don't think anyone, I'll speak for myself. I don't debate the fact that plea deals can be and often are the best resolution for a case. And notwithstanding 14,000 jail days and all of that, I get that. I think all of us do. My deep concern has to do with what we are assuming is being done in that little teeny window of time to protect and to advise the defendant of their rights before they get to the plea deal, my ticket out. I'm deeply concerned about that.
you need to look at one of these files, and you need to see the three pages that we go through with them to ensure that all those things occur and the answers they give to us.
So you would, then nothing would ever change in, you get that file and you look at it and you make your decision. You would not stand before this court today and say that there has not been a case where you could look at that and 6 weeks from now, 6 months from now, the case changes dramatically.
Oh, no, they change dramatically, and I think you're operating under the illusion that we are expecting to get 100% acceptance of the pleas. Our preliminary discussions and projections were if we were doing a good job and the prosecutor's doing a good job, around 70% of the people would want to accept the deals and 30% would be rejected because we needed more discovery, there were competence issues, and so forth. And, in fact, in the 2 weeks we did it, that proved to be true. We had three people that were rejected out of the nine that participated, and six accepted the pleas. Four of them got misdemeanors, and two of them went to drug court. And the reasons they took the pleas were to save their jobs, to get treatment, and to avoid harsher sentences. So,
and the status of this currently is what? The order has expired by its terms. The ADKT expired December 31, 2012, but it never got put in place except for a two-week period, correct?
Yes. What happened
so
was...
So it would go back in and be reactivated if this court were to rule as...
Right. What happened was we were doing it in justice court initially with a justice court appointment. And we took a long process, and early on we had justice court approval, and then later on it turned out we didn't. We didn't know that. We started doing the process. We got into it 2 weeks, and the justice court quit appointing us. So Judge Hardy then determined that he would make the order of appointment so we could continue...
And then that's been stayed.
And that's
been
stayed by this.
And now the order's expired. But the assumption everybody's making is if this court were to rule in favor of Judge Hardy's order, it would then run for 6 months.
Right. I'm assuming, and you have to speak to him, he'd re-enter it and the county would reaffirm the contract.
Okay.
The county's reaffirmed the contract twice, so I would doubt that would not occur again.
I think we're out of time here. Thank you very much. Mr. Petty, you have, I think, 2 minutes, and I'll boost that to four, given how much time we've... You stop.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to dispel a couple of points, and then I want to just explain some facts. The argument from the real parties in interest basically is, apparently the public defender is not doing its job. It's not seeing its clients. It's not conveying offers that are given or attended to it by the district attorney's office, and that premise is false. To the extent that the district attorney offers any of our client a plea negotiation, the deputy who is representing that client conveys that we're obligated to do that. We were obligated to do that before the Supreme Court said so in the case cited by Mr. Elcano. So communication is taking place. The other thing I want to point out is there's this idea that there's a time lag between the time we pick up the case and ultimately see the client and converse with the client, and that's not true. That premise is false. We have a deputy at the Washoe County Jail every day, Monday through Friday, who is there to assist people in bail reduction motions, potential ORs, looking at the charges they are facing, if in fact a charge or complaint has been filed. Oftentimes a complaint hasn't been filed within the 72 hours. We have somebody there. The other thing that I want to point, as I said, the other thing I want to point out is, for you, Justice Cherry, the way the program works under this ADKT 411, if implemented, is they never see Justice Court. The defendant never goes to Justice Court. Justice Court is completely bypassed. A district attorney makes a decision as to a particular case, as to what the resolution could be, conveys it to Mr. Elcano's group, who goes up to see this individual in jail who's in custody and probably wants to get out, no doubt about it, and says, hey, the district attorney will do this. If you plead guilty to this, the district attorney will recommend this, diversion, what have you. And then the defendant says, oh, okay, sure, that sounds like a good idea. They never go to justice court. There is a direct filing in the district court, a direct information filing in the district court. No justice of the peace is appointed the WLS attorney or...
The statute allows that to happen.
The statute requires it to happen. The statute requires that the public defender be appointed. What this order does, and now I'll come back to you,
Justice. How do you skip justice court if it's not an indictment or an information by affidavit?
That's what the administrative order does.
It's violative of the statute as far as I know.
I suspect that in addition to getting the voluntary plea to the felony charge, it will also get a voluntary waiver of the appearance before the Justice of the Peace and get right into district court.
Well, do they actually go before JP to waive preliminary to go up to...
I suspect paperwork is filed indicating the desire to go to bypass, sort of like bypass go, you go directly to district court. That's what is happening. And then, Justice Douglas, to answer your question, in the words of the administrative order itself with regards to co-appointment, paragraph 3, and this is found on page 90 of the petitioner's appendix, which is the order, it says, in the event WLS counsel is appointed as co-counsel, comma, the Washoe County Public Defender shall have no further responsibilities until such time, comma, if ever, comma, the case is removed from the ECR pilot program. If at any time before entering a plea, the presiding judge determines the case should be withdrawn from the ECR pilot program, the judge will relieve the WLS counsel and direct the Washoe County Public Defender to represent the indigent defendant in all further proceedings. So we are co-appointed, and then we're told don't do anything.
What is the perceived or the stated good cause to appoint this other attorney pursuant to
171-188 subsection 3 allows the appointment of counsel other than the public defender upon good cause or where the public defender is unable to proceed. And it says for good cause. I suggest to you, and in my papers that I filed with the court, I argue that would encompass the situation where the individual there's a conflict because of multiple defendants, or there's a conflict because the complaining victim or a recipient witness is or has been a client of the public defender's office.
We have this blanket order for good cause.
Well, the way the judge says good, the way this order frames good cause is it frames good cause as the very fact of the order itself. It says, this is a good thing. This ECR program that I have before me is in and of itself good cause to justify us not appointing the public defender and going with this co-appointment process to the WLS. That's what this order says.
Well, that's true. Why not just appoint WLS? Why appoint the public defender?
But the statute says you have to appoint the public defender.
Well, it says unless there's good cause. Well, you're saying if the...
I'm saying that's what he says, what Judge Hardy says is good cause. I'm not saying that constitutes good cause. I think this order fails to establish good cause because there isn't disqualification of the public defender. There isn't a conflict with the public defender.
But ostensibly, it's a co-counsel appointment. It is not a replacement. So,
it's a substitute counsel, Your Honor.
But the paragraph 3 that you're reading from, the first sentence describes it as co-counsel relationships.
But it is
going under 260.
It is a substitute counsel. If you look at NRS 260.060, which is relied upon by Mr. Elcano and Mr. Gamick in their pleas, because there's a line in there that says that the court for cause can appoint in addition to the...
Yes, that's what they're relying on.
Yeah, and I want to say that they are putting an awful lot of weight on that sentence that it cannot sustain. If you read that statute, NRS 260.060 speaks to the extraordinary circumstance where the public defender is going to need additional counsel. Let me give you three examples real quick, if I might. This morning, I watched the very first argument that you had this morning, and Justice Gibbons was talking about tax ramifications and the canon issues that were going on in that particular case. And as I watched that, I thought, that is completely outside of my area of expertise. I make no pretense about tax or accounting or what have you. If I were trying a criminal case where those were central issues, I might want to associate an attorney to aid me in the expert cross-examination or direct examination of experts on those issues. NRS 260.060 gives me the statutory authority to move a court for an order to compensate that attorney for that service. As an institutional public defender, if I were to do that, I would use my own resources. But that's what this statute speaks to. Another example is the Gallego case, when Rick Cornell, who after having represented Mr. Gallego for 11 years, the state public defender asked if they could have him co-appointed with the state public defender, they utilized 260.060 as the funding mechanism to justify that appointment and pay Mr. Cornell for those services. A final example would be David Middleton in Washoe County, we had a double homicide death penalty case. Our office was relieved as counsel by motion of the district attorney's office. The case didn't go to ordinary conflict counsel that was existent at that time. Instead, Judge Breen hired Fred Pinkerton and Pat Flanagan, Judge Flanagan, to represent Mr. Middleton, and the funding mechanism in the statutory authorization was NRS 260-060. That statute speaks to extraordinary circumstances. It doesn't speak to a situation where the judge says, I know, I'm going to appoint co-counsel with the Washoe County Public Defender's Office. I'm going to basically make him stand aside, substitute the WLS attorney in, and this is my statutory authorization.
Didn't he indicate that the good cause in this particular instance is that you either don't have the resources or the ability to act in a timely manner, or you just don't have the desire to handle this program or participate?
You know, that, first off, the premises are false. We have the desire. We have the resources. We have the skill. But more importantly, if you look at petitioner's supplemental appendix, about page 4, I think, of that appendix, there is a letter to Mr. Gammick from the Justices of the Peace of the Reno Justice Court, where basically they reject that argument. They say, we do not find cause under NRS 171-188 subsection 3 simply because the Washoe County Public Defender will not participate in the program as you define it. The Justice of the Peace said that does not constitute cause, and that's essentially their argument. Their argument is, hey, we want to do this, and you won't play with us, so that constitute cause to avoid the statutes that define and dictate how counsel is appointed. We say that that is wrong. That violates the statutes. It can't be any clearer than that. The word shall means shall. The court shall appoint the public defender unless. There is no unless existent here today. There is no unless existent here today. So we say that the administrative order of Judge Hardy should not be sustained. We think the court should direct him to vacate that order. For all the reasons that we've said today in petition, and frankly, Justice Hardesty, for the very reason that you posed to Mr. McCarthy, that it is the Washoe County Public Defender's job to make these determinations. It is the Washoe County Public Defender's job to represent their clients ethically and completely.
You know, you made a statement earlier that it was impossible for you to get a sufficient discovery in order to participate in this program. And that's why it was interesting to hear Mr. O'Connell representing that in each and every case he has discovery.
Justice Perry, if you understood me to say that it's impossible for us to get discovery, then if I said that was a mistake.
Okay, I must have misheard you.
No, we are getting discovery, but, you know, there is one thing to receive the discovery. There is another thing to read, understand, absorb it, and we have very...
So your position is you're not satisfied with the sufficiency of the discovery at that point?
I'm saying that it takes a little bit of time to look at the discovery, get up and make and give an educated, have an educated discussion with your client.
Okay.
Now, the premise that's being offered by my good friend, Mr. McCarthy, is that more often than not, if you just go up and talk to him, you know everything you know about the case, and if the guy wants to plead guilty, then everybody's done, we can all go home, and justice has been served. And our position is that's ludicrous. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This matter will be submitted and will be in recess until tomorrow morning.